You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Okay, yes, I have to agree that there's been a lot of unrest in this country over the last year or two, from coast to coast on various issues, people coming forth, people wanting their voices heard. Many times, some of these demonstrations, some of these gatherings, yes, indeed, can be on the violent side. But the point I'm trying to make here is that this is not something brand new. We have seen demonstrations, we have seen public unrest for many years since the founding of this country. But not always do people believe that Al Vona has it all right. So that's why I've invited my guest this week. She is law professor and author Gloria Brown Marshall. Her new book is A Protest: History of the United States. And I couldn't think of a better time to have Gloria on, because the book really talks about what is actually happening, the unrest, the political environment, the issues that people seem so so upset about, and anxious to get their voices heard. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Gloria Brown Marshall about her new book. Gloria, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning. I really appreciate it.
This is I don't know if you were when planning to, in writing a protest history of the United States, but I mean you couldn't have hit it any better in terms of time, from coast to coast, whether it's the political environment, whether it's something that this country policies that this country has been making over the last year or two, the environment, the economic situation here in this country. People are bound, 300 plus million people are bound to voice their opinions. And sometimes when you get a large group of people together and they feel that they're not being heard, it can cause unrest. But I get the sense, and I want to hear this from you, that you understand that better than most people. And in putting together the book, you've understood that, unrest and political discourse is nothing new in this country.
It's not new. As a matter of fact, the Declaration of Independence that we're going to be commemorating next year for 250 years is a protest document. And so the colonists were protesting King George and the behavior of the monarchy. So protest has been with us, whether or not it's women's rights or the indigenous people protesting and resisting encroachment on their land, slave uprisings, creating unions, all of that becomes a part of the protest. And of course, anti-war protests have always been there.
Now, the other thing that I, and you mentioned this in the book, and I'm glad you did, because it clearly defines sort of what's happening here, and diverse. I emphasize that word, diverse forms of protest. Meaning that this is, not singular in terms of issue, not singular in any one particular group. What you and I here on the East Coast may find cumbersome or bothersome, and gets us up and out of our houses to protest or put forth our voices, maybe different from the Midwest, maybe different from the South, maybe different from people on the West Coast. So an issue, the same issue, can cause people to react differently, correct?
Yes, and we also need to know that protests are always going on. Just because it doesn't make the news, as you said, from one region of the country to another, there could be a small protest at a grocery store in Tennessee as opposed to a school board protest in Michigan. So there's always a protest going on. The national protest that we're seeing today is what's making the difference. When you start to have so many people gathering across the country protesting at the same time, that is where history is being made.
Do you get the sense, and I've heard this over the last year and a half, I hear this from friends, I hear this from people in general, obviously there's an anxiety, there's an anxiousness among people, but by and large, what I'm hearing is, I've never seen this country in such disarray. And I step back for a moment and I think to myself, well, couple of things are in motion here that weren't in motion 30, 40 years ago. We didn't have social media the way we have it today. Everything 24/7. I mean, you can pick up your phone and find out that there are various groups across the country protesting as we speak. It wasn't quite that way 30 or 40 years ago. When I say that way, I mean in terms of getting the word out. But are protests more prevalent today, more violent today, putting more anger in people today than any other time in history?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, the protests, the No Kings protests, were not violent, even though I saw some images here and there where I think the reporters actually had to really go out of their way to find some type of confrontation between protesters and the police. But for millions of people to have protested, no, these most recent protests were not violent at all. I will say that the country is not used to protest the way it was before, because if you go back to the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, and in other times, there were protests happening nationally that were happening at such a rapid pace that we got used to protests, and now we're going to have to get used to protests again, because most of the country now is not happy about certain things, and they're going to be protesting in different forms, whether or not it's deciding not to buy from certain stores, or they're going to give to campaigns and protest to try to get a particular candidate out. People can now voice their opinions on social media, not just get the information from social media, but anybody could have their own radio show or their own YouTube channel, and so people have so much information out in which they're stating their opinion. Stating one's opinion in a way in which they are pushing against or what they feel is oppression, and feel they have to say certain things in order for people to hear their voice, whether or not it's that or actually going out in the streets, there are so many different ways in which people are, voicing their dissatisfaction against corporations as well as the government.
Yeah, and I'm glad you clarified the fact that, one, this is not a new phenomenon, but again, you did talk about something that gives anybody today a voice. If you really feel strongly about an issue and you want to have your voice heard, obviously you can do that in front of a public grouping. But sometimes just being able to, as you said, through YouTube or some of these online platforms, you can do it from the comfort of your living room or your office. Another thing you mentioned in the book, and I'm glad that you did, because I think it remains somewhat of a clouded part of all of this, is the fact that many people feel that their voice, their singular voice, doesn't get heard. And you talk about how some protests and protesters remain unsung. What I'm getting at is this goes back to a personality trait. And correct me if I'm wrong. That's why I'm throwing this out to you. I need to be heard. In other words, does ego play a big part in protesters or those who lead some of these movements?
I think more empathy for people beyond themselves. Initially, for example, the George Floyd protests, it could be frustration and anger and shock to watch somebody actually being strangled before your eyes by a police officer who's being videotaped and recorded on the phone and not care that that's happening. Or the beating up of Rodney King shocked so many people when that was first videotaped. And we saw all of that. And people will rise up and emote. They will want to let out their frustration and let out their anger, let out their confusion. And so I think it's less ego. I'll tell you a story very quickly. I was on a panel with a woman who was a mother, and she said she became an activist and she became a protester because her child was born with special needs. And she had to have a voice for the child in order for people to understand there are lots of mothers going through what she's going through, and she needed to have benefits for that child. And the only way that she saw the government actually hearing her is by being an activist and a protester. And she never intended to be ever, but she had to speak up for her child. So you have situations like that. People who are unhoused don't want to be protesters, but then they say, I've got to do something because my situation is dire. So there are many ways. In this particular situation, for example, the No Kings protest, there are many people who believe the country's on the wrong track. And you had protesters, for example, the Tea Party protesters. They believed the country was on the wrong track, and they started protesting. And so you have people today who believe the country's on the wrong track and that it's not being the democracy we want it to be. And so they're protesting. So you always have this conflict in this country between people who view liberty different ways. They view the values of the country different ways. And those people are going to stand up and they want their voices heard. And when you start having millions of people protest, just like with the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement, when you begin to have millions of people protest, that means it's not just a local issue. Now it's something that's being felt across the nation. And the example of the Vietnam War protests or anti-war protests, people, young people wanted to vote. Remember, the Constitution had the age to vote at 21. There were protests in order to change, persuade lawmakers to move the age to 18. And people don't even remember. And that's the other thing about protests. Protests happen and we get the benefits, and people don't remember that protests allowed that change to happen. That's why we have the age 18 for people to vote, because it happened during the Vietnam War era. And they said, if we're old enough to go to war, we're old enough to vote. And so there are many different reasons. The 18-hour workday came out of protest. That was signed into law in the 1800s, but it didn't become a reality until the 1900s, and that was because of protests. So one can have many different rights on paper, but protests in many instances will make it a reality.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on that, because and you touched upon a good point. I remember being 18 and not being allowed to vote during the Vietnam War, and yet the drafting of service people was at 18. And, how can you draft me if I don't have a voice to oppose or, throw my two cents in? So, very good point. I want to just take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is law professor and author Gloria Brown Marshall. Her new book is A Protest History of the United States. And I couldn't think of a better time to have Gloria on, because right now we're seeing a lot of protests across the country. As Gloria has been pointing out, this is not something new, which leads me to the next question, Gloria. And you would know this, I think, better than most people. Now, I've had neighbors, friends, people, who are disenfranchised by what's happening. As you said, there's various issues in this country. One will say, why doesn't that person or that group just, button up their lip and don't, go about your business, live your life and just, back off. And someone else will say, well, wait a minute. Doesn't the Constitution, doesn't the First Amendment give us the right to free speech? How important does that part of it play into these protests? I mean, don't people have a right to at least voice their opinion in this country?
Not only do we have the right to voice our opinion with free speech, but the last line of the First Amendment is the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. And few people get to that last line. So we have the right to petition, to ask the government for a redress, to remedy our grievances, complaints. So we have the right to ask for the government to fix our complaints. And that is in the First Amendment. So it's not as though we're going far when we're thinking about what we, the people, have the power to do. And the freedom of assembly, that's the other thing. We have the right to gather. And this was because those same American colonists who were protesting King George and the monarchy and the treatment by England were putting into the Constitution the very things they were denied when they were under the English monarchy. And so each time you see, and this happens throughout American history, as soon as one group gets into positions of power, the first thing they want to do is oppress another group or, define the rights based on what they have and what they want. And so that one generation or group comes in and defines the way that America should be. And they say, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. And I've heard this again and again. It's like, well, why must you leave your own country? Protest is patriotic. protest was something the framers of the Constitution wanted us to have. And so for people to say, if you don't like it, be quiet. If you don't like it, then you can leave. And they say that only until they don't like something, and then they want to protest, they want to speak up, and they don't want to leave. So I think we have to realize the people power was built into our structure of government. So when the government is seen to be getting off course, when many people believe it is right now, and that we're having a constitutional crisis, then it's up to the people to put the government back on course by at least stating their discontent with what's going on. And we can agree or disagree with that discontent, but they have the right to say it.
Very interesting, because on the tail of that, I remember reading a book back this past summer on amendments, which is changes, adjustments to the Constitution, which people have the right to do. But it, again, going back to what you were saying, if it weren't for large groups of people, you know, coast to coast, a nation getting together and saying, look, this, the Constitution needs to be adjusted here. You're not addressing all the needs of the people. You're not, you know, what was in place 100 years ago is now antiquated. So it sounds like, you know, one, protests, demonstrations are vitally important in order to get anything to change or to move forward in this country. Are we unlike any, I got to ask you this, Gloria, are we unlike any other country? I mean, do people look and say, my God, we have no problem in making adjustments. If people are unhappy, we're glad to do it. I know that sounds awful simplistic, but are we any different than anyone else?
Yes and no. And I'll tell you, I've been in Italy, France, as well as in England when they've had protests. But they can protest to the point where they have a sense that the government is so far off track that they need to change the people who are leading the country. That's interesting from the stat, and I always watch this and they say, oh, the government is, you know, has to be reconstituted. There has to be elections. So they'll have snap elections. They'll have other elections. Since we have a defined time period in which people can be in office, our protests are even more important because we can't change the government midstream when it comes to who's president of the United States. They're in for those 4 years. And unless there's something that allows them to be impeached and removed from office, whether or not they're a judge in federal bench or in Congress or the president of the United States, they're going to stay there. And so that means protests are even more important in the United States because this is the way in which we can voice our opinion between the first day of a person being elected and the last day that they're in for 4 years. And it's up to the government to actually hear the people instead of waiting for the election and find out who's going to be unelected or who's going to be put in office. They need to listen to the protests, unlike other countries. So we are unique in the way in which we can voice our opinion to the government, and we were meant to voice our opinion. Other countries actually don't have the same mechanisms that we have that actually say you are meant to voice your opinion to the government. We do. The right to petition the government for a redress of grievances is in our First Amendment of our Constitution. And James Madison wanted to have that people power. I think other parts of it is the concern, especially that people have, that not only is our democracy at risk, but there's a constitutional crisis. And so they're saying to the government, this is our concern. Would you address it? Would you make changes now? Why do we have to wait for Election Day for you to change the policies that you're putting forth and affecting our lives? So a voice becomes the power of the people, even if it's small communities saying something about their local school board or millions of people saying something about Congress and the president.
And on the heels of that, many people feel that change is just part and parcel of bettering one's, our nation's lives, the lives of, yes, of the individuals. And as you said, you know, otherwise, I always had the sense that, you know, lawmakers are not anxious to uproot things, to keep things the way they are. You know, obviously, it makes life easier for all of them. But without the voicing, in this case, in this country, without the masses voicing opinion and wanting change, I think it would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, Gloria, I think it would be awfully difficult to get any changes made, to move forward, if it weren't for the masses voicing their opinions, right?
Right. I mean, in my book, I also speak of being part of a union as protest, because workers, their protest was to unify and then make demands to the employer or the corporation of whether or not it was in the 1800s and the coal miners of the 1800s, 1900s. People, in order today to have the type of protections and safety we have on our jobs, the workers had to protest, and joining a union was a form of protest because it allowed people to actually voice their opinion with enough power for management or corporations, businesses to change things. If it was up to the government and if it was up to corporations, many of them back in the 1800s, we were serfs or enslaved or working under horrible conditions. So many changes are part of protests we wake up with every day. So that change has to be something, and life is change. And people, as you said, are uncomfortable with change. But the people who are in good, comfortable positions are especially the ones who don't want change, because they think life is great and you should accept it just the way it is. And they call names and say it's un-American or you're ungrateful or you should leave. And so you see all the propaganda and the name calling to people who do want the change. And then when the change happens and it benefits people in the country, there are people who didn't want women to vote. Think about it that way.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many ways in which we wake up every day embraced in the benefits of protest. But when the protest is happening, that change is uncomfortable. And that's why they, you know, many ways denigrate the protesters. And plus, people in positions of power want to stay in power. They don't want to change anything that's going to seem to take any of their power away.
And just for clarification, and I think you'd agree with this, is going, as you said, going way back to the founding fathers when they wrote the original Constitution, many had comfortable lives for considering the period, the time period in history where we were. Many were landowners. Many were very wealthy. And didn't want to see, didn't want to underscore any of what they had gained. I guess from a psychological point of view, you say, oh, well, okay, I get it, but that's not good enough, because the way they live and the way, you know, we have to live, the worlds apart. And that's a reasonable argument. And I'm also glad that you clarified the fact that, because some people say, oh, look what's going on in the United States. Look what's going on in America. They just can't get it together. Everybody's unhappy. These things happen worldwide on different scales, as you mentioned. And I'm also glad that you pointed out the fact that this can be a small community just wanting something for their a betterment within the community, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education. And then it can grow into a national issue. We don't always hear about the small ones, but I would venture to say, and I just want to get your quick sense on this, that each and every day in every community in this across this country, there are protests, demonstrations, or just an ambivalence about the status quo and wanting changes. So it's not unique, right?
It's not unique. It's so funny that, you know, there are construction sites that have the giant inflatable rat because they have what they call the scab workers or the non-union workers. That's a protest. That giant rat is a protest. And the fact that you see the construction workers walking around who are part of unions, you know, walking around that construction site, they're protesting the fact that that business is using non-union labor. So there are so many ways in which those tiny protests are taking place. When I think about police officers and the police unions, they had to lose lives in order to form a police union. And yet so many times the police officers denigrate protesters, you know, and Black Lives Matter is denigrated because they're saying we are talking about a particular issue and we want to help you to understand that we're under duress and this is hurting us. And that's what happens in many protests. The Vietnam War protests, these people are saying the war is wrong, lives are being lost, you need to stop. So even if you look at the Gaza protests, and there are people saying, think about the children in Gaza, think about what's happening in Gaza. And you have other people saying, well, wait a minute, are you saying that's anti this or what? And that's what happens with protests. Many people it's protesting against, but you also have to say, well, what are you protesting for? And I think when you have a clash of values or a clash of what the vision of the country is, and that's from the very beginning, the Declaration of Independence is written for a protest, but also it's written by people who are oppressing the rights of the indigenous and oppressing the rights of people of African descent. And so you have people saying, wait a minute, you're protesting England. What about the way you're treating me? So there, sometimes protests can be rather complex as well.
Absolutely, and I think again, I'm glad you clarified it. Is the fact that you can have people within a small geographic range and thinking they're all on the same team when the issue can be a diverse for one party versus another or one individual versus another. So no different, Gloria. And I don't want to break it down and make it sound that it's, oh, he's got this, he thinks it's that simple, like two kids playing in a sandbox and one throws a little sand on the other, and before you know it, they're throwing their buckets at their pails and their shovels at one another. But what I'm getting at is that it can be a small issue on the national scale, but to individuals, those who are impacted on a daily basis, as you said, with that woman who decided, hey, look, this is my child, and, this is my flesh and blood, and I'm going to do everything I can to protect this child and advocate on behalf of that child. And I hope, and I know we've only got a couple of moments left here, and I just want to get your quick sense on this. I just hope that people keep it in the context of that this is not wrong if you feel that strongly about it. I mean, I know there's people who say, wait a minute now, Al, you're going outside the boundary lines here. I'm not saying that that's not my role. I'm not a government official, and I'm not an elected official. All I'm saying is you can't take the voice away from people, right?
People power. People have been empowered by the Constitution, and people have the power to ask the government to change when they believe it's going in the wrong direction. And people did this under other administrations, and people are doing it under this administration because they believe that the country is going in the wrong direction, the government has become oppressive and vindictive, and that the Constitution is in crisis. And we have those major issues like that. It means that people across the country are saying, listen to us, government, and stop doing what you're doing. We think you're really going in the wrong direction, and you're harming the American people, and that's what protest is for.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Again, the book is a terrific read. As I said, timely. you couldn't get it to be any more timely. A Protest History of the United States, written by my guest, Gloria Brown Marshall. Gloria, if people want to get more information, maybe pose questions to you, how might they do that?
Well, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Blue Sky, and you'll see me online. And I just want people to know that the power of the people to protest can be found throughout the Constitution, but especially in the First Amendment. And they need to know that amendment was placed there because of what happened to the prior generation. So each generation has to fight for freedom on its own. Freedom isn't free.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gloria Brown Marshall. I want to, again, thank Gloria for being on the show this evening. Again, like I said, Protest History of the United States is her latest book. Any questions on the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN, 508-752-0700. I certainly welcome all your comments, questions, or feedback. That is always helpful to any of us here at the staff. In my case, it's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.